back. The show's open. The show's open and rolling. We had opening night for The Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals reprised last night. The reason I've been gone for the last month is I've been doing my day job for 8 hours a day, and then I clock out and do my night job, which is prop master for a musical, for sometimes up to another 8 hours. It's been just bazonkers. But the show opened last night, and thank you so much to my assistant props master, Mari. Between the two of us, our effects got really big laughs and screams and ew from the crowd. And it was just so, so gratifying to hear the opening night crowd react. Listen, obviously they mostly reacted to the actors, what they were there for. But it was great for some of the props and for Colin's sets and Brandon's lightings and Mariah's costumes and like all the design crew. It was so great to hear the audience react to like even the material stuff beyond the actor stuff. So thank you everyone. If you were there in the opening night crowd of Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals, I love you and I'm so happy.
But she only loves those who come to the opening night. Anybody else who comes any other night,
I just haven't met
you're
anyone
dead
else
to her.
Yet. I haven't met anyone else yet because Emily, what time is it right now?
It's 8 in the morning on a Saturday for me, which means it's 7 in the morning on a Saturday for my sister.
And the reason I'm recording so early is I have 2 shows of The Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals today. And I had to get to the theater early for a little extra rehearsal for one of the understudies, because they have to learn how to do some of the prop effects. But I missed podcasting with Emily so much that I was like, I can't even wait for Monday when I have my evenings back. I have to podcast with her right away.
Plus, we have to post this on Monday.
That too. Didn't even think about that. I was like, yeah, we'll just take another week off.
Well, it's so funny because like podcasting is something Megan and I obviously do extra. It's not like the one thing that we do. And so I'm just like, oh, I'll have some time and like, you know, just I've missed this so much. I'd be out doing other things and be like, oh my gosh, I haven't podcasted with Megan. Okay, listeners, I hope this comes across. I'm just going to say it. I haven't spoken to my sister in a month because I respect her time and I respect how busy she is. And I'm not going to make her multitask and talk to me while she's on deadline for 2 jobs. And so I'm just so happy that I see her face on the screen.
Listeners, the one time she tried for a completely reasonable, tiny request, she texted me to ask what one of my passwords were. And Emily, you had no way of knowing. It was a nightmare day that you texted me.
Oh, no.
Because it was the first day of tech rehearsal, which means it was the day that prop effects had to work. And things that were supposed to be pulled apart on stage had to be set nice enough that they could be ripped apart on stage and then reset. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. It's 6 a.m. Emily thinks she's texting me before anything big happens, as she just like, hey, can you send me your Amazon login? I need to order some stuff to my house before Texas. Emily had no way of knowing I had been up and working on my Netflix job for 3 hours already.
Oh.
Because I'm like, I have to get my 8 hours in so early so I can finish up these props and take them to the theater and set up and build things for tech rehearsal. So at 2:30 that afternoon, I finally text her back and said, I think it's, but I'm doing it with my voice command. And of course, voice command can't read my string of nonsense password. But I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'm in the car driving to the theater. I don't have time to look up the password. And then Emily's like, I'm going to try and log in and you're going to get a code on your phone. And Mari, my assistant, was in the car with me. And I was like, I can't give you a code Emily! And I'm like, I know this isn't reasonable. And this isn't something I should be upset over. And she's a really, really good sister. And I'm like, I think this is, it was the stress of literally everything that was happening was coming out because of this. So it was, again, Emily, you are not at fault for this in any way. And even in the car, I knew it. I'm like, this isn't about this text. This is such a reasonable text. But she has her own Amazon account and she just doesn't want our parents to maybe see. And I'm like, okay, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And so I texted back, I can't do that today. I'm sorry.
And I can read between the lines.
And I was like, okay, yeah, thank you. There was also, sorry, as I was looking at the text for that, there was another day where you had just called me, as you sometimes casually do. I didn't pick up the phone, and I just texted, hey, sorry I missed your call. Just checking. Is it an emergency? Emily, you are not the only person who's lost me for a month. My malevolent buddies, Nicole and Jess and Milk. I haven't listened to any of the new Malevolent episodes.
Oh.
I am 4 Malevolent chapters behind.
That's so many chapters.
Right? And my morning, like, I haven't done writer's group for 6 weeks. And I haven't done my morning art studies. I've been doing art study mornings on Wednesday and Thursdays since April. And I've, like, ditched those. So, like, I have not done anything except for my day job and this musical. Because they're both very difficult, demanding jobs creatively. I had a check-in for my Netflix job yesterday. And so typically we have to get a page done every week and, you know, just do a review of it. And this week I got 3 pages of script done.
Oh!
So it was the rough stage. It was the rough stage. So it's easy to do that quickly. So, like, what was so gratifying is at the check-in, I pitched my sequence. And the pitch itself went really good. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on fire today. Because we don't have the radio track for it. Sometimes they'll record the actors for us and we can time our stuff out to that. But we didn't. So I just, like, used the script and I pitched it myself. And it was just really nice when I got to the end of it that my director goes, whoa, that was your whole sequence. And I was like, yes, it was. So anyway, musical's great, my day job's great, and now I'm back to podcasting.
Yeah!
And I woke up an hour early before my alarm the other day, and I wrote on my Star Wars fan. So, like, that's how good my week has been.
You're so focused!
I know!
It's amazing!
Maybe I should never get on social media again, ever.
Oh yeah, I have all her passwords. That's how, one of the reasons, one of the ways she prepped for all of this is to remove.
Maybe don't give them back for a
okay,
while.
Okay, I will hold on to them for a while. So my
what's the most fun thing that happened while I was gone?
I went to Texas and saw our Niblings.
Oh yay!
We watched Singing in the Rain together. They'd never seen it before. I don't think the littles were super
into it,
but everybody else, it was well. So listeners, if you haven't seen Singing in the Rain, it is about a silent movie stars who are entering the era of talking pictures. And as a kid, I'm just like, yeah, silent movies, because, like, we've watched those before as kids. But I'm sitting there with my nieces and being like, do they even know that movies used to not have sound? Like, all of a sudden I'm like, how much background should we have given them? Because, like, the movie is set in 1925. It's set 100 years ago.
Hey, guess what?
What?
So you know how Debbie Reynolds played the lead in the lead love interest in Singing in the Rain?
Yes. I did get to tell our niece, who is obsessed with Star Wars, that we were going to watch Princess Leia's mom. And she was super excited.
Debbie Reynolds is the ghost that haunts the theater where we're putting on the show.
Wait, what? So what theater is that?
I am just about to tell
you. I'll keep my pants on.
The show goes on at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. It is a 100-year-old theater. It's absolutely beautiful. Look up photos of it online. But there, and there's even like a plaque outside talking about Debbie Reynolds and her history with this theater. And she even had Don O'Connor, who's one of her co-stars in Singing in the Rain, come and perform there. But like inside, there's like, I don't remember if she co-owned the theater or if she like paid to restore it, but she was like a huge patron and a huge star that frequented this theater, the El Portal. And there's all this theater superstition that she is the ghost that haunts this theater.
Okay.
And I now have a ghost story.
Oh, is it scary? I've can you tell me? I've
never had one before. Now I do. It's okay. Not huge. I didn't see an apparition or anything. But we're starting the first day of tech rehearsal. So the actors are in mics. It's the actors' first time on stage with the lighting, with the band, with the set. Because the actors have been rehearsing just in like, you know, dance halls and mirror rooms for like ever. And now everyone's on set and we have like a bunch of the technical elements that we're practicing with. Our stage manager, Juliet, she has a microphone that she will usually say hold, you know, when they'll start dancing. And if, you know, we need to pause the show and fix a light or something, she'll just say hold. We start the opening number. And the actors are, you know, in their opening positions and they're starting the song and they start singing and they break into the first chorus. And then over the microphone, we all hear a voice go, hold! And, you know, we stop the music and we stop the light. And we're like, Juliet, or like, because our stage director is normally very soft spoken and she'll just be like, hold, that's it. But somebody, like, yelled it into the microphone. And it's like, was it you? Was it you? And everybody stopped. And Juliet's like, that wasn't
me. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So Debbie Reynolds called the first hold of our tech rehearsal.
I love that. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And there's all these signs in the basement that's like, clean up after yourselves or the ghost of Debbie Reynolds will haunt you forever. And I left one of my prop stations. There's a little prop effect that I have to make during the show. Anyway, I forgot to clean up my space after and oops. So, but good thing I'm going to the theater so early. I can clean that up when I get there.
Well, let me tell you, if you do get haunted, our niece will, that's just going to cement you as her favorite aunt being haunted by the mother of Princess Leia.
Didn't realize I'd ever lost that position. Ah! Although I was very morose. There was a day where everybody's down in Texas with the family because it's a big event happening for one of our nieces. And I am in a, last Saturday and Sunday, we had what are called 10 of 12s, where you're at the theater for 10 hours and we're working. So we're at the theater for 12 hours and we're working 10 of them. And we're literally like running the show as this event is happening for our niece. And my dad emailed me a Zoom link to it and like, try and listen if you can. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I am working. I'm running around and picking up and putting down and helping. Yeah. So I was feeling like a little morose and I'm looking around at all the cast and I'm like, they don't know I'm missing a family reunion for this. Oh, but now the podcasters know. Hey, it's been 15 minutes. Listeners, do you want to hear about Mistborn instead of our lives? You have to know that we caught up before the podcast started.
We did.
And then we just caught up more because, again, Emily hasn't spoken to me in 6 weeks.
It's been so long, forever. But I'm so excited to talk to you about these chapters. Which ones have we read? Remind the readers.
Oh, I'm like, maybe I should remind you, Emily, which chapters that we read. But no, we are in Mistborn, The Final Empire. We are getting into part 4, Dancers in a Sea of Mist. And we read chapters 26, 27, and 28. Emily, at first brush, what did you think of these chapters?
We got Ellen's? How do you say Ellen?
I forgot how we say it.
We got a POV from him and it was phenomenal. I didn't know that's what I was missing in my life. I am complete. Everything is good.
You've got your sister back. You've got Elin. I think we call him Elin.
I think it's Elin. Listeners, honestly, this morning I had a moment where I'm like, do I remember how to set my computer up for podcasting? We got the Elin POV, which I love, love, loved. And this has been an enjoyable book. It hasn't been my favorite Brandon Sanderson book, but all of a sudden in this part, I'm realizing we're getting into, I don't want to say political, but we're getting into like the machinations of chess, 3D, 4D, 8D chess playing of, if I move this piece, then this is going to do a cascading effect that affects, you know, these houses and this house and this house. And you realize Kelsier has it all set up. And I love hearing about his plans. I love it, love it, love it. And now we're getting House Ventures side of things and what they're trying to do. And so as a reader, you're seeing the two pieces come together to clash, and it's setting up future conflict. And I am so excited for it.
and the book's getting dark, and I'm so excited for an Elin point of view, because we've only been seeing him from Vin's point of view.
Rose-colored glasses point of view.
Yeah, and also it's like, is he sincere? Is he lying? Is he manipulating her? But we'll talk to that more when we get to his chapter. First off, I'm going to summarize chapter 26 for you. So it's been 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since Vin and Kelsier ran all the way to the caves. Mm-hmm. And she's still, like, feeling the after effects of that. But with the army gone, it feels like the whole plan is going to be a failure.
Yep.
And Breeze specifically really confronts Kelsier about this and about, like, Kelsier's pride. I can't wait to get into and talk more about these conversations. But this argument is interrupted when Spook comes in and announces that there are executions happening in the Fountain Square.
Yep.
And the townsfolk have to watch as the Lord Ruler has dozens and dozens of ska brought to these waterless fountains.
Random ska.
Publicly executed. Until the fountains run with their blood. And Kelsier is like, there cannot be any higher visual stakes than this. Ooh. Emily, can I get the epigraph for chapter 26?
Yes, ma'am. I am growing so very tired. That's it. It's one line.
Do you know what? Mood.
Mood.
I'm growing so very tired, except I can see the hope on the horizon. So the girl I'm texting. Ooh. I'm messaging all the time about, like, oh, but just after this week, everything will slow down. After all the props have to be turned over, everything will slow down. And then I'm like, well, after tech week, you know, everything will slow down. And then I can relax more. And then it was like, oh, yeah, I have to do all the fixes during tech week. After dress rehearsal week, everything will slow down. And I was being so serious where I'm like, after opening night, everything will be great. And then I'm like, I have to get up early to podcast. I have an early call because of our put-in rehearsal. And it's a two-show day tomorrow. But tomorrow, tomorrow I'm going to sleep in a little, only podcast one thing with Emily, maybe even write a little Star Wars again before I go to the theater. I'm so close to defeating that gigantic chapter. Oh, listeners, my current chapter is 4,000 words long.
Not enough.
Okay. Not enough. But can I say, sorry, I was looking back on Jedi Scavenger, my fic, and I'm like, you know what? I feel bad that I haven't posted in so long, but I've already shared more than 23,000 words. And I was like, Huh. And I have like a lot of other scenes written later on. So I tallied up how much I've written on it. I've written 60,000 words on this fan fiction. Ooh. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. All right. Let's do anyway, it.
Vin's in bed and she's got a headache. Emily, what's the longest headache you've ever had?
3 days.
Whew. Well, Vin's got you beat.
Oh, I didn't realize it was a competition. I thought everyone's experiences were equally valid.
She's the protagonist.
She is the protagonist. She has to be the special one.
Yeah, and she is very special. So this pewter drag situation, that's what this recovery is called. This pewter drag situation has been going for 2 weeks.
And I think to add insult to injury to that, it's something that I say she did to herself, not like this is all her fault. But I feel like if I knew exactly what caused my headaches, I would do everything that I could to avoid it. But like there was no way Vin could have avoided that. And so she's suffering for a choice she had to make and did. And I just think that's rough.
That's rough, buddy. Oh, and listen, the mood in this chapter is dour.
Very. They are suffering from the after effects of losing their hope. I mean, this was their big plan. This was something that they all believed could work. And now that this huge portion of thousands, thousands, thousands of people have been killed, their army is gone. It's just like the strings have been cut out. Their legs have been yanked out from underneath them. Like how do you go back to your normal life knowing that you had a chance to fix things?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so like the big bad thing, losing the army, having Yaden take the army out early.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the bad thing happened very quickly, and then we just had this slow buildup of dread. Because Kelsey and Vin, they ran to the caves in a day, and then they took the full 2 weeks to get back.
Mm-hmm. So traveling with a headache. Oh.
Yeah. Ugh. And they'd also, like, been sleeping on the ground. Yeah. And Vin's like, oh, do you know what? I'm getting too soft. Beds are a luxury. I've taken for granted. And she got to crash as soon as they got back. But Kelsey stayed up explaining what happened to the crew. Like, I couldn't imagine the dread of having to tell everyone what had happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, Vin gets to take a bath. I dream of going back to your house and using your gigantic bathtub.
It's welcome for you anytime you want to come out here. It's wonderful. I use it all the time. I love it so much.
Nice. You know what? I haven't even been to Disneyland in 6 weeks.
That's how you know how busy Megan is if she has not been to Disneyland within 2 weeks.
Yeah. I finally, once, like, during opening night, I'm like, enough is enough. Enough is enough! And I made a reservation for, like, just a random Tuesday or Wednesday evening. And I'm like, when I'm done with day job this day, I'm just going to drive down and have an evening at Disneyland by myself. Watch the fireworks. Because I can't go during the weekends. Because we have 5 shows every weekend. There's a show Friday night and then 2 on Saturdays and 2 on Sundays. Which is just bazonkers.
Yeah.
All right. So Miss Board. Sorry, listeners. Hey, listeners, also thank you for letting us take such a long break. Like, thank you for not complaining, I guess. Listen, I'm sure you complained in your own lives. That's fine. That's great. Thanks for not sending us any messages about, like, where are you? Where's the podcast? I love and appreciate you all a lot. Yes. And I'm so excited for this show to get filmed. Oh, yeah, it's going to get filmed and it's going to get put on YouTube. And I cannot wait to share with you video evidence of what I spent the last 6 weeks working on. But anyway, Vin is like, man, I can't believe I used to hate smells in my bathwater. I used to think they were so obnoxious. That's kind of nice.
It's okay to appreciate the finer things in life. I think it's still interesting that that she's maybe not worried about it, but that she is thinking about it, about how like this used to not be real life. And I get in the context that she's realizing how blessed and privileged she is in the moment and that other people don't have it. But I think it's fine that she appreciates what she has now. Like, just because you have something nice doesn't mean you need to feel bad that nobody else has it. Like, take a moment, appreciate it, and then move on.
Yay! Although, still in, like, she's still in character where she's like, okay, that's nice, but my hair is getting too long and that's annoying. Yep. And how much time do these ladies spend on their hair?
There's still very much that me versus them, that mentality, which is very interesting because I think that line is blurring more and more. And I think she's maybe trying to grasp it wherever she can, because there's always been that delineation for her and it's been so important that she's not like them because they are awful. And I don't know a lot of socioeconomic terms, but the idea of us versus them, I think, is very important to the people in charge sometimes, because it gives people something to fight against and grumble against rather than the people in charge, who sometimes are the ones in charge of the whole system. So it's interesting to see that at work here.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone has come together and realized, one, their army is gone. Two, the person funding this whole thing is gone. Yaden is gone.
Yeah, the money guy. And we're in this for the money, right? We're a heist crew.
Remember how upset I was at Kelsey A for doing the whole fight thing? And I'm just like, you're the one who started this all. Yaden shares a lot of that responsibility as well. I don't think it was just Kelsey A. I think Yaden was heavily influenced by Kelsey A. But dude, you had one job and you royally forked it up.
So the thing that's so funny about this is the rest of the crew is not really taken in by Kelsey A's theatrics.
Right.
Like, the fact that he is a Mistborn is new-ish to all of them. Mm-hmm. This is his first big job since escaping the pits. And so he's never been a Mistborn for any of their plans before. So there's, like, an extra level of, like, mystic woolly-woos to Kelsier. But, like, Yaden fell for Kelsier's act, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
So, like... Listen, yeah, Yaden was stupid, and he should have stuck to the plan. He was one of the people in charge. But it's so interesting that, like, Yaden wasn't specifically one of the marks Kelsey was trying to convince, right? Kelsey is trying to manipulate and I say manipulate, and you're like, oh, bad word, bad deed. But, like, no, he is trying to emotionally manipulate his army, because they need people to fight for them. And he was trying to instill loyalty and inspire something kind of like beyond what they felt before. But like, it's pretty hard to inspire hope against something as powerful and dark as the Lord Ruler. And apparently Kelsey A just inspired hope a little too hard and made a whole army of martyrs with like religious fervor over like Lord Kelsey A's powers will protect us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whoops. I love that the crew treats Vin as an equal when she sits down. Mm-hmm. That they want to hear her thoughts and her feelings as well.
Yeah.
Love they've got the 16-year-old sitting drinking ale.
As one does. No biggie.
As one does. And so Kelsey comes in on the scene and he's chipper.
Oh, he's just fine.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Bay wraps for breakfast. And then everyone's like, hey.
Hey, my guy.
It's hey. Dachshund's talking. So I want to take this opportunity to read out one of the first listener emails we got, which was a very thoughtful email from Serena. So, Serena, this comes off of our conversation we had about Dox's backstory and how I don't love the idea of turning Dox into a woman character for the adaptation. But Serena says, are we all collectively forgetting about lesbians? Body of the email says, hey, Emily and Megan, love the podcast. The Cosmere culture gets bro-y, and I love you both as a dive into this world that's not afraid to talk about the gender discrepancies and class struggles that I think are a super important addition to the world building. You two are doing great. Please keep it up. I love that you sent this to us during our gigantic 6-week break. This happened July 4th. Serena, I want you to know this email had no effect on the fact that we had stopped the podcast for a while. All right, I'm listening to episode 102 right now while y'all are struggling with changing Dachshund's character to a woman because it would make his tragic backstory less sad to lose the love of his life. I agree, I don't think Dachshund's background should change, but I don't think it needs to if Dachshund was a woman. Lesbian Lady Dachshund falling in love with another woman who is kidnapped, raped, and murdered in front of her can still be the tragic background that makes her join the rebellion. Is there something I'm missing about this narrative change, or do we think the world isn't ready for more women and more queer women in our fantasy stories? Thanks, y'all, for the good work. Serena. So, Serena, I assure you, I never forget about lesbians. They're so important to me. But you are absolutely right that there is a dearth of queer stories like this, especially in a lot of mainstream epic fantasy. Listen, I know where to go to find the lesbians in fantasy, okay? But I love your opinion, Serena, and I think that's great. I actually would like it even less if we introduced it's a different cat.
It's a different cat.
Okay, she's done. I actually would like it even less if we introduced a queer woman just to have her be assaulted and murdered off screen. Because I definitely don't want to see that on screen. Emily, did you watch Voltron Legendary Defender?
I tried. I watched the beginning. There were too many dudes. There were not enough ladies. And it was, listen, for me, it was mostly, I wanted more character building stuff, and it was mostly battle stuff, which mm-hmm. doesn't appeal to me personally. So, no, I didn't really watch it.
All right. So, the shipping on Voltron Defender, Legendary Defender.
Oh, I've heard about the shipping. Yes, yes.
That, to my memory, that ranks as one of the, like, 5 most toxic fan bases I've ever seen happen. Mm-hmm. But huge spoilers for Voltron.
Okay.
Before there was a Comic-Con before one season came out, and they confirmed one of the main 5 characters as a gay man. And they said, but the reason why he's not dating any of the other defenders, he has a fiance back on Earth. And everyone just loses it over this fiance, Adam. And I'm like, Adam's my new favorite character in all of animation. Look at this picture of Adam they showed at Comic-Con. I would do anything for Adam. I love him. So, surprise fiance, none of us have heard a word about. This main character has not said anything about. And then the season actually airs, and the two of them, before the character engaged to him, went off to space forever for a long time. They argued and were kind of on the rocks. And they killed Adam off before they could reunite on
screen. No!
So their only time together was a flashback, and they never... was a flashback in which they were arguing, and they never interacted happily.
Oh, once. No.
And I was like, oh, that's such a marketing mistake to pump him up during Comic-Con like this and then kill him. And you know what? I was right. And there was a lot of backlash. So, Serena, thank you so much for your kind email. I assure you, I never forget about lesbians. I personally wouldn't want to have this be the only queer love story we get. Emily, light spoilers. There's some lesbianism in Era 2 of Mistborn.
Yes!
Not super main focused, not super main centered, but they'll be there.
Great.
Never forget. Not, Emily, not how often secret. Do you forget about lesbians? Do
Never.
You think about lesbians a lot, Emily?
So, it's so funny when I... Serena, your email was lovely and I was so happy to get it, but it got me thinking about other people who are just like, well, we already have one lesbian in there, or we already have one gay couple in there.
You
Why
need at
we...
least two. Right. They come in pairs. Bonded pairs.
And the idea of, well, we already have one, that's enough. And I'm just like, in a friend group, you can't just say, no, we already have the token Democrat. We already have the token liberal. We can't have any more. Like, you just... People are just drawn to each other, and I was a part of, I'm still a part of a really wonderful friend group, and we have a story that we wrote in high school, and I absolutely adored it, and it was all females. It was all the characters were female.
It was all based on you.
Yes.
It was all self-inserts interacting together.
Yep. And at one point, we had played around with the idea of turning it into something commercial that we could, you know, maybe get published or whatever. And we had hours and hours of debates about who should be, which character should we turn into a dude? Where can we have some gender equality? But like talking about stuff like that. And I'm just like, do you know how many adventure stories there are with all dudes and nobody cares? Like that it's all dudes. And that was kind of one of the first things that got me thinking, because I hated that we were trying to change the story. And I understand that there were going to need to be some changes, but I absolutely was just devastated when they're like, no, we have to turn one of us into one of these characters, into a boy to appeal to the masses. And I'm like, okay, if we have to.
Well, do you remember when you first told me about that change and I flipped my lid?
You
and
were
I was like,
so
what
upset.
About Sailor Moon?
Yeah.
That's all women?
Yeah.
And Jane was like, I've never seen Sailor Moon. And I'm like, Jane!
So I'm looking forward to Era 2. Let's leave it at that.
Me too.
Not to take us further off track.
We're 45 minutes and one page in. Okay, here we go. Take us further off track.
Nope, you know what? That was good. That was good.
No. I want to know. Okay. I miss you.
Well, I was just...
Tell me all of your thoughts.
Well, I was just thinking, like, if you did gender swap more people... I know we kind of talked about it at the beginning, but it's been forever. I can't remember. We talked about Dachshund being one. Did we say Ham or Breeze or...
I want Breeze, actually.
I agree. That's who I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then... Fun lesbians instead of tragic.
Yes! Ones. And I had... Honestly, I had never heard the trope. There's this very specific trope about... lesbians or gay couples getting together and one getting tragically killed off. And I know that got
barrier
brought up.
Gays. Oh, I want to talk about
barrier gays.
That.
Yeah, I know that got brought up in the Adventure Zone, because we do end up with that happens to a lesbian couple. And Griffin McElroy said he had actually never heard of it and he'd fallen into that trap. And so he was trying to learn more so that he wouldn't do that in the future, which I think was so, so wonderful of him, instead just to be like, well, that's just how the story is. He's so aware of listeners and how that comes across. And that was honestly the first I had heard of it. And I was happy to learn more. I think that was great that he wanted to educate people.
Okay, so there's a reason why I didn't bring up barrier gaze when it came to discussing the Dachshund backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So barrier gaze is a trope specifically about in the 80s and 90s when it wasn't mainstream and it wasn't really allowed to have queer characters in stories. Any queer couple would end in tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you couldn't really depict something positively like that on screen. It even like goes back to the Hays Code in the 1930s, where like characters who do like bad things on, like, you can't show bad things on television unless the characters are punished for it. I say television, it was movies. This was before TV was invented. But like, there's a relationship in Buffy that 100% counts towards this.
Mm-hmm.
And so barrier gaze is very specifically about your only queer characters in your story dying. And so I don't think Adventure Zone counts.
Okay.
Because of the other canonically queer characters that do get happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
So like, here's the thing. So I think Voltron absolutely counts because that was the only confirmed queer character we had. So for me, barrier gaze is specifically about the only LGBTQIA+ character, the only one, or like if there's a pair that like one of the pair gets killed off.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people were upset in the Adventure Zone when there was an heroic sacrifice where a queer couple went, lesbians down, I repeat, lesbians down. But I feel, because of the identities of some of the other characters, that wasn't as bad. But like, also I get that it's hard to lose any character you care about. But also, I love writing stories. I love writing sad stories.
I know you do.
I'm writing a necromancy story right now where pretty much every character dies at least once. And some of them die permanently. Which is very sad in a story about necromancy. but yeah, so...
Almost like, what's the point?
So, yes. It's hard. And maybe if we had more of them, it wouldn't hurt to lose one of them. But this also goes for any minority identity that's represented, or any less represented identity. It hurts to lose when there's only one of them. Which is why you need at least two, but then you need at least three so you can lose one and the other two can be happy.
You can't just have one. They need companionship.
Emily, have you seen Sinners?
You know I haven't, because I'm waiting for you and I to see it together.
So there's a trope in horror, a stereotype, that in an ensemble piece, it's usually, you know, in slasher movies, it's the characters who either have sex that die first, or it's like, it's typically a black character that dies first in a horror story. And I really, really like what Sinners decided to do with those stereotypes. Sinners is really good, you guys. I saw it twice, and then I've watched, I'm not kidding, like, as I've been working, like, 50 bajillion reactions to Sinners, because I'm like, this movie's so good, I need to see other people see it. Mistborn! Oh, yeah, we haven't even, I think we did talk about, there's not a lot of racial, not disparity, diversity. There's not a lot of racial diversity in Mistborn. And that's something that I think, you know, it's a fantasy world. Anything could happen. And wow, they just all happened to be white. I do really like the effort that Brandon has put into his later stories to correct this. And this is one of Brandon's earliest works. And it really reflected, like, himself as an author. And I think he really sees himself in, like, all of these characters. And as his books have gone on, we're now 20 years into his career and hit what, 80 books deep? It's been really fun to see the effort he's put into not only writing experiences outside of his own, but getting advice, thoughts, and notes from people who lead like different lives from his as he's trying to write these other experiences. So there's a lot of stuff that we may like ping at in these early books that I think he's really grown as an author and like focused, like put an emphasis on trying to do better, which is so encouraging to see from somebody instead of being like, this is my niche and this is what I write. And if you don't like it, read someone else.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to. I want to read Brandon Sanderson.
Well, great, because that's what we're podcasting about, allegedly. Although, hey, so the crew discussion is all great. I love that Breeze is the angriest. And I love that Breeze is the one who's, like, most direct. Because, like in his name, it doesn't seem like stuff has really stuck to him before, right? He's been the, oh, of course, old boy, kind of character. And I love that he is the one taking point on this argument.
Mm-hmm. He tries to soothe Kelsier's emotions and Kelsier shuts that down hard.
Yeah, ooh. Breezy money. Well, the argument doesn't get too far because Spook shows up
and announces something bad is happening.
A gathering. And Kelsier says, we're going. And Ham's like, we usually avoid these. And Kelsier is like, mm-mm, yeah. No. Now, Vin's never been to an execution before. All the men in the city are required to attend. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter your station, men have to be there. Yes, all men. yeah, she's never gone before. They pay someone off for a good rooftop seating. And Kelsier has clubs, smoke them out. So they're covered by copper. No one can feel their allomancy. And also something that's interesting, Vin's never seen a crowd like this before.
Yeah. And they talk about, again, the bells are ringing, everyone has to go, and the obligators are there, and they go into houses and mills and taverns, and they check. And if you, if they find a man in hiding or hasn't, like, wasn't planning on going, they are also executed. This is non-negotiable. You must be there. And they talk about this also being a show of the Lord Ruler's power, the power to gather this many people and to make them go where he wants to go. And it might be too early, but it's fascinating to compare the Lord Ruler to Kelsier here, where Kelsier has this larger than life charismatic presence that draws people. They're curious about him. They come kind of their own free will versus the Lord Ruler who makes them do his bidding, makes them obey what he says. And we find out that, like, everyone's being collectively soothed / anti-rioted. That was mind-blowing.
Early on in our podcast, this was a Megan So Evil.
Okay.
Where I was like, okay, but how much would it take to soothe an entire city at once?
Rude.
Oh, man. Lord Ruler. Like, listen, I've been doing a lot of Star Wars stuff my whole life. And I think the Lord Ruler is the one villain that I think captures what Darth Vader feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. Where there's no way you can fight it. Like an ordinary person against this. And it feels so unfair. It feels, I mean, how are you supposed to fight? I mean, this goes into, again, the question of Mistborn. How do you fight this? How do you rebel against someone who has such total control and so much more power than you do? I mean, no wonder people give up before they even start.
Mm-hmm. But Kelsier is trying to riot his crew. So yes, he's got us in a bubble. And it's how does one person stand up to the Lord Ruler? Kelsier's literally doing it. Everyone else is crushed down and he's just trying to lift up his crew. And it reminds me of the prologue when the plantation owner is looking over his field of slaves, and Kelsey looks up and smiles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Vin eventually figures out what's going on and joins him. And I love that.
Just takes one person.
Yep.
Just one person.
Because the thing is, and this is kind of what Kelsey A is banking on, is that the whole system works, but the whole system is so fragile that you mess with one foundation strut and it's going to cause problems throughout the thing. And if you mess with enough foundation struts, the whole thing will hopefully come crashing down. And so to see this early, to see Kelsey A standing against him and to have Vin come and stand with him, and just that idea of, if we can just get this ball rolling, because the crowd is so large. I honestly think that if they were freed of the Lord Ruler's obvious influence, there's so many people they could very easily take over and storm the capital, storm the city, and take out everybody. There's just by sheer amount of people there.
It's the ants in Ants versus the grasshoppers.
Yeah, yeah.
But so the prisoner carts are full of prisoners. Now, it's nobody we know. It's just a bunch of NPCs. But there's a moment where Spook is like, why doesn't Kelsey A do something to saving them? I mean. And Vin is like, there's 8 Inquisitors down there. No. Like, what? Like, we know that Kelsey's even struggled against, like, 1 Inquisitor. Nobody's killed an Inquisitor in this book. And there's 8 of them. So, like, what even could be done? But, though I wouldn't be surprised if he considered it, she thought, remembering when Kelsey had been ready to rush down and take on an entire army by himself. She glanced to the side. Kelsey looked like he was forcibly holding himself back, white-knuckled hands gripping the chimney beside him, to keep himself from rushing down to stop the executions. Hey, Emily. We're going to take a little Stormlight detour, because we are allegedly a Stormlight podcast.
All right.
Do you think Kelsey A and Kaladin would get along?
Yes. I think they might drive each other crazy, or like they might not understand them all the time. But putting those two together, I think the two of them could single-handedly overthrow whatever government you threw at them.
Nice. Oh. Everyone is sad.
Everyone is like
miserable. Kelsey is furious.
Yeah.
And I love, okay, so I love repetition in writing.
Mm-hmm.
I love repetition in my real life, which is why I'm so excited I get to watch my favorite show backstage 24 more times before our run is over. But I love the 4 more deaths echoing through.
Yes.
This scene.
That was
pacing wise, that was
beautifully
so good.
Done.
Cinematic. These books are so cinematic. I wish more people in Hollywood could read. They can't, Emily, it's so sad. They can't read. They don't know how. They just read summaries that their assistants who can read typed up for them. except these days, they probably read AI summaries. Which is worse.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, I Googled myself the other day because I was checking something on my IMDb page. Mm-hmm. Google now has AI summaries under its search results instead of text from the actual site.
A lot of times it's just copy and paste from actual sites.
And, oh, no, I know what it was. I was Googling my TikTok because I'm not on TikTok anymore and I needed view counts. I was sending somebody view counts on things. And the Google summary of my TikTok is, may contain gardening tips and art advice. And I'm like, I've never talked about plants or flowers even once out loud on my TikTok.
You know what else gardening refers to?
No.
Partaking of weed. People say I did a little gardening.
I haven't talked about that online either.
No, you haven't.
Oh, four more deaths.
Yeah.
Hey, every man has to be here. Do you know which man Vin spots in the audience?
Oh, I was just about to bring it up. It's her father. Dearest daddy.
Oh, I daddy was talking about dearest. You, Ed, but
oh.
But, yeah, let's talk about Vin's dad.
Okay. Vin turned, studying the regular obligators instead. Most of them held themselves proudly in their administrative robes. The higher their position, the finer the robes. Vin squinted burning tin and recognized a moderately familiar face. There, she said, pointing, that one's my father.
My father.
My wife.
My dad.
Ugh. And Kelt, so he's got a golden robe scarf. So it sounds very fine. It sounds like he's one of the upper crust. Kelsiel.
Crusty jugglers.
Kelsiel. Oh my gosh. Kelsiel. Fell silent. That's your father, he finally asked. And they the name is Tevidian. I don't know how you say it. The Lord Prelan, who apparently is the leader of the ministry. He's the most important of the Lord Ruler's obligators. Technically, he's even higher ranked than the Inquisitors. I love the hypocrisy in this book. It drives me nuts, and I absolutely am here for it, because they're not supposed to do this. Their whole existence is like trying to find those that this has happened to and to wipe them out. And I absolutely adore that the highest man in this ministry is guilty of this. I love it.
Sorry, the leader of the blah, blah, blah. I rewatched Secret of Nim for the first time in maybe 20 years. Like, I've watched scenes of it for, like, reference since then, but I sat down and I watched the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so many quotes from that movie that I had just forgotten.
Yeah.
Like, Teresa! Martin! Also hilarious, there is a scene where they're walking through the rat's headquarters, mm-hmm. and there's a sign. I was watching it with my buddy Maggie, and there was a sign above one of the doors that said grain storage. And I was like, the last time I watched this movie, I couldn't read that sign. Long it's been. But there's a bit at the end where Jeremy the Crow is begging her. He's like, Miss Briss, I need the sparkly. Give it to me right now. And she's like, I gave it to Justin. And he goes, Justin? Who's Justin? The leader of the rats. The leader of the rats. And I was like, that was a sound bite that I had been quoting forever, and I'd forgotten where it was from.
Mm-hmm.
The leader of the rats. I think Kelsier's speech here is fantastic. Do you want to talk about it?
Yes. Which speech?
Oh, sorry. Did you want to talk more about her dad? I realize I interrupted.
No, I had finished. I just are we talking about after Spook is like, why doesn't Kelsier save them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So you're right. Vin does see Eland. None of them were laughing, and they weren't the only ones. True, many of the nobility made light of the experience, but there were some small minority who looked horrified. Like, again, Brandon is humanizing them, and I love all the questions he sets up, because, yeah, we have these awful, terrible nobles who laugh while, you know, the streets run with blood, but then you have others who, like, it's genuinely affecting them. And, like, Elan later says, well, we want to do something about it. We just have to wait until we come into power. Like, there's so much real life going on at play, and I love it.
So, the cinematic language of this scene, there is something in cinema called the Kuleshov effect, which proves that shots in sequence relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And camera angles that the audience will prescribe meaning to shot A depending on the content of shot B. So And I might have discussed Kuleshov effect on this podcast before. I for sure have on our other, so I'll describe it real fast. Kuleshov was a Russian filmmaker, and he did this like experiment where he filmed a man with a neutral face, you know, not making any expression. And he would share a film reel where you'd see this man with a neutral face and then a bowl of soup. And he'd ask the viewers, what is the man feeling? And the viewers would say, he is hungry. Because they're like, oh, the guy is staring at a bowl of soup. Therefore, we know that he's desiring that bowl of soup. Mm-hmm. And then they show him the same man staring at a woman on a beach. And they're like, oh, he's lustful. You know, he's horny, although I don't think that was in the Russian vernacular in the 1920s when this was happening. Or he's looking at kids playing on a playground and they're like, oh, he's kind-hearted. So, like, Brandon is using the relation of the cinematic shots within this sequence in, like, such a cool and interesting way that lines up with Kelsey's speech. It's very reminiscent of Sam's speech at the stone window at the end of Two Towers. But the reason why I bring this up, Vin is looking at Eland after Kelsier has said, you think I've been too hard on the nobility, think I relish killing them too much, but can you honestly see these men laughing and tell me they don't deserve to die for my blade? I only bring them justice. And that's when Vin looks at Eland. And I think it's this interesting confrontation of ideals between her and Kelsier, that Kelsier is like, all nobility deserve to die no matter what. Mm-hmm. But Vin is looking at Eland. So we're filming Vin and then we're filming Eland. And I, as the audience, am prescribing an emotion onto Vin that she does not feel that Eland deserves to die the way that Kelsier says he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And Kelsier, sorry, I don't know, we skipped a little bit over the content of what Bree said, but we're an hour in and we haven't even hit a chapter, so I'm just going to keep going. But Kelsey is like, Bree, you accused me about not even wanting to take the ATM. And I'll be honest, it was never my main goal.
Yeah.
You know, we will grab the ATM because we need it to form our government, but this job isn't about making me or any of you wealthy. Again, this is another reason why I don't think Kelsier should reveal in the first meeting he wants to kill the Lord Ruler. And I think this is another potential place where it's a good reveal. I would love if he either revealed it after he goes into Credit Shaw the first time, where he's like, the real goal is to kill the Lord Ruler. Or if, could you imagine if, like, he reveals here, he's like, the goal was never the ATM. Mm-hmm. The goal is killing him. After we've just seen the Lord Ruler crush everyone, I would love to save that reveal to this moment. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be beautiful.
Anyway, Yaden's dead. And Kelsey wraps up with, if we're going to do this now, we have to be upfront and honest with ourselves. We have to admit it isn't about money. It's about stopping that.
Yeah. This man who everyone can clear, like, I think this is a great moment. I think it again highlights the inequality. I mean, this man who can bring thousands of people to an absolute standstill, and to have Kelsey, because they've talked about this is what they're going to do, like, they've talked about it, but to I think Brandon did such a good job here reiterating this is what we're going to do, but seeing it in play at the same time. Brilliant. Love it.
Now, here's the thing I didn't even think about until this read through, because Vin is like, wow, maybe he can do it. Mm-hmm. Kelsey is using emotional allomancy on all of them while he's doing this speech. And I wonder if that's influencing this actual change of hope that they're feeling.
I wouldn't put it past him, honestly.
Yeah. And not even, I don't even think it's intentional. Like, he really is trying to give them a life raft against the Lord Ruler. But he is using emotional allomancy on them while he's doing this speech. And I just wonder if he's intentionally or not rioting their emotions to agree with him in this speech.
Interesting.
But do you know what? The loss of the army still accomplished our original goal.
Yes, I love this.
Why were we raising the army to fight the garrison? Emily, is the garrison in town right now?
Nope.
Where are they?
They went to go fight them. They went to go assist, and the garrison's out. And they are also counting on the garrison not coming back for a while.
Yeah.
Which is so great. It's so great. I love that this worked.
Right? So, do you know what? Did it work the way we planned? And the whole army's dead before we even start. But if we can really get the house war going in earnest, we can still do the plan. And they're like, okay, yeah, but what about when the garrison comes back? And he's like, we will have the money to buy them off.
Yeah.
So if we can seize the Lord Ruler's ATM stash, if we can house war and kill the Lord Ruler, when the army returns, it'll be our army.
Hashtag our army.
Yep. And Vin says at the end, she can just see the silhouette of the mysterious Lord Ruler. And that's our real foe, she thought. Not the missing garrison, not the inquisitors with their axes. That man, the one from the logbook. We'll have to find a way to defeat him. Otherwise, everything else we do will be pointless. Ah! Emily, can I get the epigraph to chapter 27?
Yes, we did it! I think I finally discovered why Reshek resents me so very much. He does not believe that an outsider such as myself, a foreigner, could possibly be the hero of ages. He believes I have somehow tricked the philosophers that I wear the piercings of the hero unjustly. According to Reshek, only a Terrasman of pure blood should have been chosen as the hero. Oddly, I find myself even more determined because of his hatred. I must prove to him that I can perform this task.
I'm gonna do it because nobody else believes in me, and I'm just gonna be the best there ever was.
So, the Lord Ruler in the logbook has Terrasman-style piercings.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears that he doesn't have the Terrace bloodline. And we know that in this book, magic is genetic. Mm-hmm. So he wears the piercings unjustly. Interesting. Okay. All right. Summary. We are rallying. We are back at the shop. And we're like, the plan is still on. A little edited, but it is still on. So we talk about that. Zed brings a message from my favorite Marsh. We're going to go talk to him. And Kelsey and Vin go to survey the meeting site early, like hours and hours before it happens, to like make sure that it's going to be clear by the time they meet Marsh. They talk about the 11th medal, and we see Vin burn a new medal. We're going to see her burn gold. And Marsh is here. And we finally get to talk to Marsh. And then Marsh tells us about soothing stations.
Oh, this was another bombshell.
The entire city is being soothed with their emotions being suppressed at all times.
24/7.
This is where the Megan so evil comes in. It's where the Megan is so evil comes in, is I drop a hint about this really early in our record. What would it take to soothe the whole city? Stations manned with government soothers at all times of day.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a huge effort underway to keep everyone in check.
Mm-hmm. We also find out Inquisitors can die of old age. Interesting. All right, Emily, back to Kelsey and his crew. They left the corpses and they left the blood at the executions.
It lasted for hours. The thing just took forever.
Yikes. Well, what next? We gotta focus on the nobility. House war. House war.
House war.
And Vin's like, okay, but what happens when someone wins the house war? And Kelsey is like, no one's going to win the house war.
Let me tell you. He's gonna
keep stirring up trouble in this pot for as long as he can stretch it out. Now, Evelie, what do you think of this plan?
I think it's brilliant because the house... Okay, I love that he's using the system's own weakness against itself because there's no way that the houses are going to... Like, they have alliances, but there's so much infighting that it's so easy for the houses to believe someone is making a move against them. It's so easy. And all Kelsier has to do is make them believe the wrong thing. They're so not assured. That's not the right. They're so confident in their own power that it makes it that much easier to trick them. And I love that that's what Kelsier is doing.
Okay, but if his plan went wrong and one of the houses conclusively won the house battle, what do you think that would look like?
I think that just means Kelsier thinks that his part isn't done yet and he's going to continue pecking at it.
Do you think Kelsier and Eland, do you think Vin will ever get her dad to accept her boyfriend?
No, I do not. I think Kelsier is so much of the opinion all nobles are evil that I don't see a way that he accepts Eland as like if Vin were like, let me recruit him, Kelsier would just be absolutely not. Like, there's no way ever.
I'm just imagining Vin, Kelsey, will you give me away at my wedding? And he's like, to Eland? No. I'm red wedding your wedding, Vin. I am pre-wed red weddening you.
But Breeze is telling Vin what she needs to do, and she needs to start gathering more information. She needs to keep doing what she's doing, but maybe at a faster rate, rapid rate.
Cool. All right. So we got to make the most powerful house look vulnerable. And then everyone turns to look at Vin and she's like, what? And they're like, it's House Venture, buddy.
Yeah.
And she's like, they're not all bad. Hashtag not all nobles. And he says, well, Lord Straff Venture is, and his family sits at the top of the empire. House Venture needs to go, and you have an in. So he is asking Vin to betray Eland.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, Breeze is like, listen, you just got to give us leverage. Little bit of leverage. And she's like, it's the games that Eland hates. There's a moment where, sorry, Sazed shows up. And they're like, oh, you're early. And everyone's like, slights Kelsier by saying, oh, somebody else could pick up at that. And Kelsier has this quote, if you're always on time, it implies you never have anything better you should be doing. And I'm like, it's me. I've been trying so hard to be punctual in arriving to the theater, but with the traffic in LA, sometimes it's not my fault.
Sometimes it's hard.
Yep. Now, we haven't lost the entire army. We've lost about 90% of them, but we got about 2,000 men left. So we're going to divide them up and we're going to secretly train them in teams. And we got to make sure none of the teams know about each other, because if we get raided and the teams get taken. Oh my gosh, sidebar, Evelie.
Yes.
I have an arcane fan fiction to recommend you.
I'm ready.
It's not done yet, but the author's been doing pretty regular updates, so I feel confident about recommending it to people. It is called This Devotion May Contain Side Effects.
I love that title.
Yeah. And it is about what if when Silco and Vander were young and trying to start the revolution in the Undercity, what if they ended up taking in a young orphaned boy named Victor?
Oh.
It is so sweet. the character dynamics are so good. Like, Victor is you've seen the first season of Arcane, right?
Yes.
Yes. Remember that big purple salamander that the doctor was, like, experimenting on? And Yeah. They end up finding Victor just after that event has happened. Mm-hmm. And he is fixing, like, watches and trying to sell them for money. And so he ends up getting a meal at the last drop at their bar. And as he starts helping fix things around the place in exchange for food, they keep trying to find more and more things for him to fix so they can get this kid off the street and he can start staying in the last drop. And just slowly over time, they end up taking this kid in.
My kryptonite.
It is so sweet. It's so good. The newest chapter was like 12,000 words. It was huge.
See, 4,000 words is nothing, Megan.
Right. What am I complaining about? But you love machinations. You love planning.
I do.
They are trying to form a miners' union. And they've got Piltover Union Busters coming in and wrecking it. And there is a day where little Victor is with Felicia, Powder and Jinx's mom. Wait, what am I saying? Powder and Vi's mom. Powder and Jinx are the same person. Powder and Vi's mom has taken Victor to the machinery shop. And it just happens to be a day that the enforcers raid looking for somebody ratted out some of the union leaders. So the enforcers did a raid looking for paperwork. And Victor gets hurt during this enforcer. No. Little 8-year-old Victor gets his nose broken.
Oh, buddy.
And Silco and Vander both go ballistic in, like, opposite ways. And I'm like,
ah. That's incredible.
But the Silco's, like, really doing machination stuff trying to get this union worked. Anyway, you would love it. It has a ton of stuff in it you would really, really, really like. So I'll put it in the fanfic recommendations channel. This devotion may contain side effects.
Perfect.
You would love it.
I will. I'm excited to read it. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah. Okay, so Sazed's here. It's a message from Marsh, my favorite. It's been too long since we've seen him. And Kelsey and Vin head out there. So as they are camping out, Vin is like, "What are you not telling me?" And Kelsey is like, "What? Why are you asking me that? Vin's like, "Because of the Lord Ruler. I felt his power." The leader of the rats. I don't think the others can sense his power the way a Mistborn can.
Yeah.
So she's like, "Be honest. You're planning on getting him out of the city too before we take the palace, right?" Right? Kelsey is like, "Don't worry about it. The 11th medal. That's the plan. The 11th medal, and we're good to go." And Vin is like, "What is it? Emily, what's the 11th medal?"
He doesn't know.
Yeah. She says, "Is it real?" And he's like, "Of course it's real. I showed it to you." It's She's a like, real legend, "Are the all right? legends real? Are you lying?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "No, I'm not lying. It's a real legend, all right." She's like, "Okay, that bit of metal you showed us, that is actually the 11th metal." And he's like, "I think so. But you don't know how to use it." And he's like, "Nope." And she's like, that's worse, right? You get that that's worse.
Well, they also have a conversation. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I love that he says, "Even if I don't discover the secret in time, I doubt the Lord Ruler will be as big a problem as you think. He's a powerful allomancer, but he doesn't know everything. If he did, we'd be dead right now. He's not omnipotent either. If he were, he wouldn't have needed to execute all those Ska to try and frighten the city into submission. I don't know what he is, but I think he's more like a man than he is a god. The words in that logbook, they're the words of a regular person. Mm-hmm. His real power comes from his armies and his wealth. If we remove them, he won't be able to do anything to stop his empire from collapsing."
Yeah.
Emily, what is the Lord Ruler?
What I think so far is what we believe, and Vin believes, that it's the dude from the logbook from That Far Away. I'm getting around to that. I'm saying what I think he is versus, well, what we think he is versus what he could be. I think he's a monster. I don't think it's this, oh, his humanity was burned away from him. Like, maybe it was, but like, how do you keep, like, it's the idea of, like, oh, when I start high school versus when I graduate high school, I am a different person then. But, like, you take that on a much larger scale. Like, you're not the same person you were 1,000 years ago if you're the Lord Ruler. Like I find it odd that he's still after the same one thing after 1,000 years. Like, it's got to be so boring keeping all these people in check. So either there's something else that's going on and this is just all a really awful, terrible ruse.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's just, like, lost so much of his humanity that he's not a person anymore.
And what is the benefit to subjugating a population versus trying to craft a utopia?
Yeah.
Why has he gone for one and not the other?
Yeah. I don't know.
That was a question for you, actually.
Oh, I would say I don't know.
Okay. It's not important. We'll probably never find out.
Right.
She's like, we should just try the 11th medal. We should just burn it and we should just try it. And Kelsey's like, that's so dangerous.
That's so bad. Yeah. And he goes on to tell her, we learn more in this chapter, that if you burn a medal that's not one of the 10 or whatever, you're going to get really, really sick. Or if it's not pure enough, like, you can't just go around willy-nilly swallowing metal. It has to be of a very particular brand is not the right word, but grade. A very particular grade. Yeah. And it has to be a very specific metal. Like, you just, there's, it's dangerous. And there are ways to be safe. And Kelsier is not. Like, he's a wild card, but I think he's not going to use this power in a way that is wrong, I guess, is the way to say it.
Yeah. The conversation shifts a little. We get some more confirmed facts about Furukami. Furukami is very internal versus Mistborn, which is, Allomancy, which is more like external, where, Allomancy gives you powers on top of what you already have. It adds to what you have. And then Furukami is dependent on powers you've stored up yourself. So you, if you store like, okay, so like an Allomancer can only flare metal so high. So like in Allomancy, you get strength added to you by your metals, but you're limited to how much metal you can burn. Mm-hmm. In Furukami, you can compound what you've stored up. So, like, let's say you stored up 4 hours worth of strength. Mm-hmm. You can compress those 4 hours worth of strength into 1 minute of super duper strength.
Okay.
So, like, the only limit is how much you store up yourself. And Vin's like, okay, that's a huge advantage, though. And Kelsey is like, ah, but we have ATM. Doesn't matter how strong you are, how fast you are, how good you are. If I know what you're going to do next, you can't beat me.
Yeah.
So he's very confident about his future vision. And he gives her a bead of ATM before they talk to Marsh.
Just in case.
Like, it's just Marsh. And Kelsey's like, eh. Or it's a trap.
I love that Brandon brings this up. Because they're in the middle of a war with magical creatures who, I mean, I feel like it's Calvin Ball. Anything could happen. And I love that he is thinking ahead and saying worst case scenario. Like to me, yeah. It confirms that Kelsier is, he might be crazy, but he is also capable.
Yes. I love a comparison he makes where he's like, Marsh is doing what you're doing at the balls, except instead of noblemen, he's got inquisitors and obligators. Mm-hmm. And I, listen, Marsh is my favorite. So if I was if I was a showrunner on a Mistborn adaptation, anytime there's all these extra marsh scenes, you guys are all going to roll your eyes and go, ugh, of course. Ugh, of course. But I do really think it would behoove us to see Marsh infiltrate the obligators. But now I'm thinking of what a great sequence it would be intercutting Vin at a ball with Marsh and the obligators.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and also, like, intercutting with Ham training the soldiers, like, showing, you know, like, this cool sequence as time is lapsing by, showing the different dangers that each of the teammates are facing as we're chasing after this plan. Yeah. So we're really close to finishing the translation of the logbook, which is exciting. Like, where, Emily, where do you think the story of the logbook ends? How far did the Lord Ruler write in his journal?
I think we're going to get all the way up to, it's the night before, and these are my feelings about it. And then nothing. Okay. Yeah.
Night before, not the day after?
Not the day after.
Okay, night before. Listeners, write it down. So, the next medal that... So, she's burned the 8 basic medals, mm-hmm. and then there's 2 fancy ones. And the one she hasn't burned, gold.
Yeah.
Emily, what does gold do?
It does a weird thing where it shows... Instead of showing the future, like ATM does, it uh-huh. shows who you are in the past and, like, what your choices were that kind of led you to who that was. Like, it's very...
Ephemeral.
Ephemeral, thank you.
So, she's seeing a noblewoman version of herself and an orphan version of herself.
Yeah.
And the foolish Vin, it's not that Vin's standing there and these 2 new women show up in front of her. She, the current Vin we're with in the story, is being judged by her from the past. Mm-hmm. But she's feeling and experiencing the Vin from the past at the same time.
Yeah.
And so Vin, here's what Vin from the past thinks of who Vin is in the book now. A strange woman changed and transformed from the girl she had always been. That girl had been careful and cautious. A girl who would never burn an unfamiliar metal based solely on the word of one man. This woman was foolish. She had forgotten many of the things that let her survive so long. She drank from cups prepared by others. She fraternized with strangers. She didn't keep track of the people around her. She was still far more careful than most people, but she had lost so much. So, our new Vin, our current Vin, she has changed, she has grown. And it's got to be such a weird experience to feel what you from the past feels about your present self. So, Emily, if you burned gold, mm-hmm. and you from, no, let's go 16, let's go to the book started. 16-year-old you, how would she feel about who you are now?
Oh, that's such a, I say, loaded question. Because the Emily of today is not what the Emily of 16 thought would happen to her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if 16-year-old Emily would be disappointed or if she would be excited or if she would be like, no way am I going to let that happen. You know, like... That yeah, yeah. It's so interesting because, like, present Emily, I am so happy with where I am. It's not where 16-year-old Emily thought she would be at all. Yeah. But, like, this is where I want to be. Like, there's so much more left yet to discover. There's so much left yet to, like, figure out. And I think 16-year-old Emily is like, oh, the adults have it all figured out. And I think she might be disappointed to realize that's not always the case.
Yeah. And like, 16-year-old Vin doesn't like current Vin.
Yeah.
But we know that Vin is happier, that she has friendships and connection, that, like, listen, yes, your 16-year-old self may not like your current self, but 16-year-old us, we were dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, based solely on the events of the last 4 weeks, I think 16-year-old me would be like, damn, girl, good job. You go.
You did it.
You're a Brandon Sanderson podcast? Hell
yeah. 16-year-old Sorry, Emily.
16-year-old me would say, heck yeah.
16-year-old Emily would go, who? Who's Brandon Sanderson?
All right. Now, present Vin looking back on her 16-year-old self. The other her was something she had always secretly loathed. A child, really. Thin to the point of scrawniness, she was lonely, hateful, and untrusting. She loved no one, and no one loved her. Aww. She always told herself, quietly, that she didn't care. Was there something worth living for? There had to be. Life couldn't be as pathetic as it seemed. Yet, it had to be. There wasn't anyone else. All right, now another hard question. Emily, you, looking back on you at 16, how do you feel about her?
Okay, listeners, I'm getting a little vulnerable with you right now. I have worked so hard to have compassion towards past me because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what's coming. You don't know what you need to do to prepare for it. But sometimes it's really difficult because I just want to look at my past 16-year-old self and put so much more responsibility on her and just say, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you figure this out? Why couldn't you have da 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 da? And that's not fair. It's not fair to your past self. At least that's the journey I'm on. and so I really have worked hard to be like, babe, you were living your life the way you thought you needed to live it. You were doing what you needed to do in order to get the life you thought you wanted. And, you know, there were definitely things like, I wish I could go back in time and change things or tell myself things or whatever. But I do think sometimes I do get unfairly frustrated with my younger self of just like, why didn't you figure this out? Because no one told me, okay? No one taught me how to do stuff, to do this specific thing or whatever. Like, and I think it's really telling that I just expected myself to know things.
Yeah.
When that's not fair. That's not a fair thing to put on anybody.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't
know. You don't know what you don't know.
If I could tell my 16-year-old self, if I'm only allowed to tell them one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do I go for personal or do I go for professional? Personal would probably be like, think about lesbians more than you currently do. But professional, I would be like, practice art basics. I'd be like, human figure drawing, start now. Because you're going to struggle with that in college. So art basics, boring stuff. If you want to make cool fan, because 16-year-old me is like, I wish I could make really cool popular fan art online.
Yeah.
And to know what? 35-year-old me, I got that in the bag.
Yeah.
But I'm like, practice human figure drawing and anatomy and acting basics, and then I vanish. And me from the past goes, who was that? That was weird. All right. The leader of the rats. Vin is like, that was real. I could touch her. I could feel her. And Kelsey was like, no, it's an illusion. And Vin's like, no. Because ATM visions aren't hallucinations. They're actually the future. Like, mm-hmm. Kelsey, that was something. That past self was something real. And Kelsey is just like, I don't know. Gold is weird. Nobody really gets it.
He has been this pillar of leadership and inspiration, and then he goes, Vin, you don't know what you're talking about, when he knows that she is top notch at what she does.
Yeah,
I love this.
You know what? I think Kelsey A also doesn't know what he doesn't know. So Emily, I'm going to ask you, are there ramifications of gold that they haven't considered?
I would hope so. I honestly hope so. I hope that for a brief moment, this is an actual person that they like pop out of the ether.
Okay, yes. So ATM can let you see the actual future and react to it,
mm-hmm.
and therefore change it.
Yeah.
Emily, do you think gold could let you actually change the past?
Oh my gosh, there's so many butterfly effects that could happen. Oh, and if that gets into the wrong hands, like, how do you stop? How do you stabilize the world? Like, if everyone finds out about that and everyone runs to change something about the past, that's going to be messy. That's where we get Section 31 coming in.
Yeah, so you could only change...
Did I say that right?
Your personal self.
Is it Section 31? Who's the Black Ops Star Trek?
It's Section 31, but just say the TVA, because do you know what? Section 31 does a lot of things. They kind of just get to do whatever the writers
want. Whatever they want.
Sorry. Is that me being salty about the existence of Section 31? Listen, Lower Deck said it perfectly. I love when Will Boimler is like, oh, so we're a secret society, but we all have notable black comm badges we wear on our uniforms marking us for who we are. Thing is, I think Section 31 is the worst kept secret police. Everybody knows about Section 31. They're not mysterious. Anyway, back to Mistborn. Now, Emily, we've met a lot of, it seems that there's a lot of mistings of the more common metals. Mm-hmm. So we've got Breeze, who is an expert at his emotional allomancy, and we've got Ham, who's like an expert at pewter. One, it's probably very difficult to find a gold expert because, again, you don't know what you don't know. How do you accidentally swallow and burn gold?
Right, right.
But if we were to meet a gold expert, tell me about what sort of stuff they would be able to do.
This might not be fair. I feel like they'd be like a high school art teacher, real crunchy granola. Real, like,
I love that.
Get in
so
tune
in touch
with your
their inner child.
Yes. With a big old scarf, a purple scarf around their necks, and kind of floating through and be like, hey, you're my favorite students. Let's go on a Starbucks run.
I love your Mistborn OC so much.
Do not steal. Original.
All right. Marsh shows up. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten some interesting changes.
Yes.
Emily, what's so different about Marsh's appearance now?
He's literally marked. He got the, not Inquisitor, the Obligator tattoos. And Vin is horrified.
You have ministry tattoos, Vin said, staring at Marsh. Of course.
Is that their couple name?
No, stop. Stop that right now. She's 17.
I'm asking. I'm like, I'm new. I can't go read fan fiction. I don't know if people ship them.
I will admit, I have never read a Mistborn fan fiction. Wow. I've read a couple spicy Stormlight one-shots. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy and am so satisfied with the canon of the Cosmere that I've never been really enticed by any fanfics, which is interesting because, like, there's other stories that I am deeply passionate about and love, like Arcane. I love Arcane fanfiction. Mm-hmm. And I love, what do I read the most? I think I read Arcane and Star Wars the most.
Okay.
Because there's so much still to, like, explore in those worlds. But yeah, I'm really, so far, I've been, like, a real canon girly for the things. Although, Priscilla and I someday are going to write our Arcane Mistborn AU.
Ooh!
That's Victor and Jace Center.
I love it.
All right. Of course, Marsh said, his voice stern as ever. I had them put on before I met up with the caravan. I had to have them to play the part of an acolyte. They weren't extensive. He was playing a low-ranked obligator, but the pattern was unmistakable. Dark lines rimming the eyes, running outward like crawling cracks of lightning. There was a single line, much thicker and in bright red, running down the side of his face. Vin recognized the pattern. These were the lines of an obligator who belonged to the Canton of Inquisition. Marsh hadn't just infiltrated the ministry. He'd chosen the most dangerous section of it to infiltrate.
Can you imagine going to art school and studying to be an artist, and your job, your post-college job, is designing tattoos for the government?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Marsh has counterfeit government tattoos. So... Well, yes, sorry. I recognize the hypothetical you just gave me, and I said, wow, that's interesting.
You said yes being and.
Like, yeah, but think about this. This is a yes and, not a forget about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I've been thinking about is the aging of tattoos. There's an episode of Elementary where he spots an undercover DEA agent because all of his undercover tattoos are the same age and the same freshness.
Oh.
So it would be interesting, like, I think an interesting element is Marsh getting these fake tattoos and then saying, but these lines need to look like they're 4 years old because I will have been in school for 4 years at this point.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of the tattoo artist taking a lighter gray ink and faking a faded tattoo. So it looks like not only does Marsh have the correct tattoos, but he has the correct age of tattoos.
That is brilliant. That's not something I would think of, but like you watch in a movie, you're like, how come they didn't think of that? It's because, yeah.
I think of those things. I think. Okay. I think, therefore, you are. Yep.
Thanks, but Descartes. I, again, because Vin has infiltrated the nobility, but it is in a way, like, she has long hair. And that's it. She's had to grow her hair out. And I think that she might have a brief moment here of, oh my gosh, either could I contribute to the bit that hard, or two, I'm glad I didn't have to, or even three, what has Marsh done? Because, like, Kelsey says, like, that's the price he knew he had to pay. It's not like he got tricked into this. But I just think Vin has a moment of like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't have to do that.
Let's say the plan goes swimmingly and everything works out wonderfully. Does Marsh wear a mask forever? Does he go out and about as like, this is a mark of who I was? Like, what is Marsh's life post we won the war like with these
face
tattoos?
Can you get it? I mean, I don't think you could, but could you try and get like flesh colored tattoos put over it? Like color it back in?
Unfortunately, that's not how. Do you know what?
Color theory, can't you do like opposite or like.
Okay.
You are so kind. No. Listeners, she's opened her mouth multiple times, and I think she's really trying to find a nice way to say it.
Well, like, sorry, Mod. I'm thinking of, like, what inking technology is available to them at the level of tech they have here. Because in our, today, modern tattoos, we can use white ink.
Yeah.
We have pigments that are flesh colored and we have laser removal. So this was me like thinking about the history of tattoos and wondering, like, because if you've got black ink under your skin, you can't put a lighter ink on top of it, right? They mix because you have to put them in at the same depth.
Yeah.
So like he could decorate. He could add a tattoo on top of it. He could just get like a black stripe across
Mine's
his face.
Mine's bigger.
Yeah. He Star Trek reference.
Yeah.
But the thing with black ink under your skin is it is there permanently. Mm-hmm. And if you add more ink to it, it's not going to get lighter.
Yeah.
So you can't. I do not believe they have white tattoo ink. Mm-hmm. And I do not believe they have flesh-colored tattoo ink at this point in their technology. Listeners who know more about tattoos than I do, which is a fair amount of you, I would love for you to write in and tell us Marsh's post-happily-ever-after tattoo amendation options. Okay, he, Marsh tells them he's a misting. Mm-hmm. He has told them about his allomancy, and Kelsey is like, what? No, Vin is like, what? And Marsh is like, yeah, the ministry recruits seekers specifically. And it's again this hypocrisy you were talking about, that, oh, guess what? The Canton of Inquisition actually wants seekers, people who can detect allomancy burning, because they will be able to detect and hunt down other illegal mistings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then Marsh is like, guess what? They're good at their jobs. We thought they weren't. We thought they were bureaucrats. The ministry is super competent.
Yeah.
They make good use of their mistings. They've got soothing bases through the city. And their only job is to give everyone clinical depression.
Yeah.
And Kelsey is like, okay, no wonder we've had trouble recruiting.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about this, I think, that like, oh, our protagonists are good and strong and amazing, and literally everyone else in the story is like, blah. Well, it turns out, no, everyone else in the story is being like Matrix level controlled.
Yep.
That's rough.
Yep.
So yeah, there's seekers and, sorry, not seekers. There are soothers and smokers at all of these stations. Mm-hmm. And this, and then seekers. So there's like a trio. Okay, do you know what, listeners? I would read a fan fiction about a trio of ministry mistings. What must that job be like? What's that clock in, clock out schedule like? Where's my The Office style allomancy comedy?
Parkour.
All right. Anyway, Marsh is everyone's favorite student. Marsh is doing so well, and he's advancing super quickly. And in fact, he gets to visit several of these stations. So Marsh is like, Kelsier, I am going to get you lists and locations, but don't be stupid. I mean, be careful. That sounds like us. That sounds like a sibling thing, right?
Yeah.
Now that we know about it, it's a serious advantage that we know. Don't waste it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. So Marsh is thinking about Inquisitors. The Inquisitors seem to have all of the allomantic powers, which means he deduces you probably have to be a Mistborn to be made an Inquisitor. Mm-hmm. But he can't. The only other thing he could find out is that they get older. They age. And the obligators say that the Inquisitors change occasionally. Mm-hmm. So they are people. They are humans.
They're people too.
Changed. So Emily, if you have to be a Mistborn to be an Inquisitor, do you think we'll see either of our main characters? Will somebody ever try to turn them into Inquisitors, Kelsier or Vin?
I feel like I'm cheating because I know what happens at the end of the book.
But
I could see that.
Are you confident in what happens in the next book?
No. I feel like that would be a very logical place for the book to go. I'm just like, okay. If we can't beat them, make them join us and do our bidding.
You know, Emily, you say you know what happens at the end of the book. But after some cunning questions, you may not entirely remember what happens in this trilogy.
I could make it up.
Yeah, we'll see. It was 20 years ago that you read this, so we'll find out. There is tension between the Inquisitors and the Obligators. Mm-hmm. So the Lord Prelon, which is Vin's dad, mm-hmm. the High Lord Prelon leads the church, But the Inquisitors think they should be in charge. So there is unrest within the Final Empire's government.
Yeah. Again, which I love.
Yep. Anyway, Marsh is like, I gotta go. Bye. And then as Marsh leaves, Kelsey's like, thank you. I can only guess how dangerous this is. And then in typical sibling fashion, Marsh is like, I didn't do it for you. But I appreciate the sentiment. I'll try and send you another missive once I have more information. Be careful, Kelsey said. He wasn't lying about that. Vin thought he really does care for Marsh.
Yeah.
All right. It's time to get Vin back in the party business. Emily,
let's do it.
Will you read me the epigraph for chapter 28?
Sometimes my companions claim that I worry and question too much. However, while I may wonder about my stature as a hero, there is one thing that I have never questioned, the ultimate good of our quest. The deepness must be destroyed. I have seen it and I have felt it. This name we give it is too weak a word, I think. Yes, it is deep and unfathomable, but it is also terrible. Many do not realize that it is sentient, but I have sensed its mind such that it is, the few times I have confronted it directly. It is a thing of destruction, madness, and corruption. It would destroy this world not out of spite or out of animosity, but simply because that is what it does. And so we've heard about the deepness a few times.
Uh-huh.
And you did just rightfully call me out that I don't remember maybe correctly the ending of the book, which is fine. I'm not super hurt about that.
I'm sorry. I love you.
But I will, first of all, say I can't quite remember what the deepness is or anything like that. But I feel like whatever the Lord Ruler is doing is keeping it at bay. But I want to say, if that is what is happening, at what cost? At the cost of the misery of everyone on the planet? Like, with however many people have lived throughout the years, was there no one who could come up with another solution?
Now, keeping it at bay, is he holding it in his body? Is he keeping it in that tent in the palace? Like, where is the deepness?
In a mine?
In a mine. In a mine. Okay, is the deepness in the pits of Hathsin?
I don't remember. We just had a whole conversation about this.
I'm asking you to...
I mean, is ATM what it gives off? Is that like, is this like the whale from Doctor Who, the space whale?
Maybe. Are they mining the space whale in Doctor Who?
No, they think it's evil, but it's not. It's fine.
Sorry.
It's not a one-to-one ratio, okay? It's...
Which episode of Doctor Who is this evil space whale from? Which doctor?
It's the It's the second Matt Smith episode where he's kidnapped Amy.
On the whale.
Yes.
Right? There's
yes.
a city built on the whale?
There's a city built on the whale, and they're torturing it to make it go through space.
Space.
And spoilers for the end of the episode, everybody.
There's a crack in the universe.
All the adults have like they've taken an oath to like never free this creature because if they free it, it's going to destroy everything because they're keeping it captive. But Amy is the one who figures it out that it wouldn't do that because it cares about the kids on the ship. And like I said, the deepness in the space whale, not a one-to-one ratio. I'm just wondering if it's going to be a situation like that where we think it's one thing, but it's something else.
Okay, so is the deepness actually evil?
Oh, I would love and hate the idea that this 1,000-year reign comes from a simple... If this is a miscommunication trope, I will flip a table. I hate the miscommunication trope. I hate it so much.
Yeah. According to the logbook, I know you just read this, but it is deep and unfathomable and terrible. It is sentient. It is a thing of destruction, madness, and corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually, or is it a mirror? And we know this Lord Ruler is a pretty messed up guy. Was he looking into the deepness and seeing himself?
Yeah. Is this like a gold thing?
Deepness and seeing what it was. Is it like a gold thing?
Yeah.
Which, like, oh yeah, gold's just weird. Don't worry about it. But, like, okay, about the gold ATM thing is, like, all of the other metals are paired up, right? You've got the pushing and the pulling metal. And mm-hmm. so ATM lets you see someone else's future. Is the real opposite of that seeing your past? So is... Now, and then we've also got the pairing, bless you, we've also got the pairing of alchemy and ferrochemy, kind of like opposites pulling on each other. So does the deepness have an opposite? The heightness, the shallowness. What's the... Okay, yeah, is the opposite of
deep, the high altitudeness.
The opposite of deep, shallow. The altitudeness. Okay, yeah. Emily, is there an opposite to the deepness?
I would hope so, yes. I love the idea of things being balanced out like that. Okay. I don't know where it is. Maybe it lives in the sky. I don't know.
All right. Let me summarize this chapter for you guys.
I'm ready.
Also, listeners, I hope you enjoy having a super long episode back after break. I feel that is something positive you will like. So we're doing this for you. So
let's do
Vin
this
is
thing.
At the ball. Vin is at the ball and she's doing her job and she's spreading rumors like chicken feed across the dance floor. Vin and Eland have a chance to chat and he's like, Valette, you gotta get out of here. The house mm-hmm. war's picking up. It's bad. Then that Hastings is killing the Tiki Elves. Also, my house is mining the ATM, so we're a target. That's probably, I shouldn't have told you that. Anyway, I'm going to go talk to my friends. Vin gets completely shut down by Lady Shan.
Mm-hmm.
And then we shift into our Eland POV.
Yep.
And Eland's buddies are like, don't trust her. Don't trust her. It's house war, every man for himself.
Yeah.
So, Dad calls Eland into his office mm-hmm. and he's talking with someone called Tensoon. We'll get to Tensoon just a little bit more. And Straff is like, okay, your job is this allegiance and you're going to lunch, so have a date and stop the war.
Yeah.
And then Elan's buddy was spying on Valette.
Yeah.
And says, hey, guess what? She's not in the carriage that left.
Yeah.
I think she's a spy trying to infiltrate your house. So then Eland makes a deal with his own father. He will go on this date if Dad gives him a few spies.
Yeah. Emily, give and take. Give and take.
Emily, what do you think of this chapter?
I really loved getting to see the houses and their fear almost. Lady Cliss is my favorite. I love her very much. She's so dumb and I just love her. I really liked seeing finally on paper the relationship that Eland and his dad have and how Eland could be cowed by his dad and agree to do whatever his dad asks, but, like, he can only rebel a little bit. Like, Eland is smart enough to read the situation, and I like that insight into his character. And I really mm-hmm. like him making a bargain with his dad. How, listen, I need something, and I'll do something that you want, but you help me. And he
in the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
No middle ground. And I love, love, love how Eland is like, Valette, for your own good, you have to leave. Your house sucks, and therefore you're going to lose, and I don't want you to lose, so you need to go, because your uncle is sucks. And, like, that's his reasoning. And okay, so, one, I have a wonderful writers group, and their, I don't want to say job, one thing that they help out with is, you know, when they read my script and they say, this works or this doesn't. And one of the things was I just didn't know what to do with a character at one point in a really early draft. And so I was just like, oh, my main character is going to tell her it's too dangerous. You have to stay behind. And she's just going to stay behind because it's too dangerous. And my wonderful writers group was like, that's a choice. But it's also not a great choice. And so we brainstormed to do it. And that's one thing, like, I always, like, look out for now, because I was just like, to me, in the moment, it just made sense because I don't know what to do with this character. So I'm just going to get rid of him. And I'll do this in a way that, like, he's very protective. This character very protective. And so, of course, he tell her to stay back and to be safe. And they're like, that's really, like, infantilizing. I'm like, you're 100% right. And so I love seeing Elin's take on this of just like, he knows what's coming and mm-hmm. I think it speaks to Valette's character that he doesn't see her as a threat. He doesn't see her as capable. And so it makes sense that he's asking her to do this. And I just like how that's set up, because we as the readers are going, Elin, look deeper, Elin. She's really cool and you're going to figure it out soon, but you haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. Speaking of people that are not deeper and not cool, Vin and Lady Cliss.
Oh, she is, bless her heart. I honestly don't know if this is really her personality, if this is Cliss's personality, or if she is doing what Valette is doing, but in just a different way. But I really like her. I think she's really sweet. I would hate to talk to her, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is another character I would love to see get more screen time in an adaptation, because she reminds me of who they stay with in town in Sense and Sensibility.
Yes!
Olives. Feels like a Jane, some of my favorite Jane Austen characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Both like her and a bit like her daughter. Oh, it is the best idea in the world. And I actually would love Imelda Staunton to play this character.
That would be wonderful.
Casting for Lady Cliss.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like older
Brandon Sanderson's
gossip.
Laws of Writing Magic. Expand on what you have before you add something new. I would rather the female roles we have get juiced up before we add others in. Well, also, we should add others in.
Yeah.
Maybe Lady Cliss could be a lesbian. Never forget. Never stop. We are never forgetting about lesbians.
There you go.
Oh, man. But Vin is playing her part really well, where she's like, oh, this is all hearsay. You probably shouldn't tell anyone. And Cliss is like, excuse me. So Vin's like, all right, did my job. So she's thinking about House Venture.
Yeah.
And she's trying to think about, okay, how do I take out House Venture but save Elend? Or, like, how do I make sure it doesn't, like, I know it's a part of the plan. And I know Elend's dad is bad, but,
Yeah.
So talk about that, Emily.
Just the idea of how do you save bits and pieces, and are they the bits and pieces that need to be saved? Could Vin make the sacrifice? You know, could I think it'd be interesting if Vin is faced with the sacrifice, with the choice of sacrificing Elend. Like, if sacrificing Elend would save the world, could she do it? Or would she sacrifice the world to save Elend?
You know my opinions on this. I would rather die before the world dying. I'm okay with it, but I would fight to save you because you've personally requested that.
I don't don't think I personally requested. I think...
Okay, sorry. It was more like, you wouldn't save me?
No, that never. Never. When did that happen? I think our argument comes would save you, and then you'd be pissed at me the rest of my life.
Yeah, I'd do a Natasha Romanoff, and I'd jump off a cliff. I wouldn't let you. And then you'd have to do Christmas in New York all by yourself with your weird teenage sidekick.
I mean, yes, please save me, but not at the cost of...
Okay, so everyone. I can let you go to save the world. Do you know what? We'll go together.
We'll go together.
Kingdom Hearts style.
Love it.
We'll go together. So it's not just Kelsier murdering people now. The houses are actually murdering itself. Them. They're every... Do you know what?
Murders.
Everybody's killing.
Well, we get... This is kind of where I'm getting into, like, the good stuff, where they talk about... as Vin is trying to puzzle out how she's going to help bring down House Venture but save Eland. After all, they didn't absolutely need to destroy House Venture. Doing so would simply make the plan go more smoothly. But she starts thinking about, like, well, whatever happens to House Venture, it cannot be the same thing that happened to House Tekiel. Their reputation destroyed, their finances unhinged. Basically, what had happened is that... Their reputation destroyed, their finances unhinged. The Tekiel had tried to pull out of the city, and this final show of weakness had been too much. Some of Tekiel's nobility had been assassinated before they left. The rest had been found in the burned out ruins of their canal boats, apparently hit by bandits. Vin, however, knew of no thieving band who would dare slaughter so many noblemen. But we hear about Tekiel, we hear about House Hastings, and this is the house that she's starting the rumor about House Hastings is relocating, and Vin's uncle is apparently happy that House Hastings is withdrawing because now her uncle might get them instead, but that is all a lie. Hastings was one of the strongest families in the city and wouldn't likely withdraw. However, they've got Dachshund drawing up documents to make it look like this is what they are doing. People seeking to buy weapons would instead look to other places, fearing that Hastings wouldn't be able to make good on contracts once it left. When Hastings didn't withdraw, it would make them look indecisive. Their allies gone, their income weakened, they could very well be the next house to fall. This is where I love this sort of thing, because you have to say, not only we need to make it look like this, but once that happens, this will happen. And once this happens, then we have to prepare to make this. Like, you're thinking in so many different planes, and I can't do that, but I love reading about it. I love reading how smart other people can be.
Yeah. Vin and Eland get to see each other. They have an alcove scene. You know what happens in alcoves, Stormpod listeners. Please, there are children listening. Actually, are there two? Hey, are you a kid? Do you listen to our podcast? Have your parents write in and tell us.
Legally, you have to tell us.
No, you legally don't. You have to tell us. Emily, have I told you about the crack going diagonally through my entire laptop screen?
I was going to text you about it the other day, but then I realized I probably shouldn't because you're busy. I actually thought about it the other day. Is it getting worse?
I don't know, but I haven't dropped my laptop since. And there's only... Okay, it is getting worse because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 flickering bars on the right-hand side of the screen. Mm-hmm. And today, there are brand new 2 flickering lines at the top of my screen.
Oh, no.
It's a race against time to fix my laptop.
Yeah.
My life is so hard. Anyway, they have a little flirty flirt in the balcony. In the alcove. Ooh. And my favorite bit, he's like, oh, the alcove has terrible reading light. And Ben's like, do not read here. And he's like, but that's how our relationship began. And she's like, that is how it will end, buddy. But then things get serious. Valette, I want you to leave Luthadel.
Yeah.
The city is becoming dangerous. Hey, Emily, do you want to talk about these? Lovebirds.
Yeah. So they're kind of getting into a political talk a little bit. And Vin is, I think Vin is looking for information, but also not wanting to get information. Like at one point, Elin tells her his family's wealth comes from Atium. Like they mine, they do the mining for the Lord Ruler. He doesn't like to bother collecting the ATM himself, but he gets very perturbed if the delivery schedule is interrupted. Find out more, Instinct told her. This is the secret. This is what Kelsier needs. Oh, Eland, Vin whispered, you shouldn't be telling me this.
Ooh, Emily, House Venture mines ATM. I might have already said that in our podcast. I feel like I've talked about that previously, and I didn't realize it was revealed here. So if I did, sorry. But since it's been a month since we recorded, was that a surprise for you?
Yeah, it was. We see here how much he trusts her, which I think makes the... It's not really a betrayal at the end of the chapter, but the things he learns about Valette, you know, are shocking to him. I think he really does care for her. As silly as he acts about, oh, I just come to the balls to read. I mean, he's the heir of one of the most powerful houses in the city. He's gonna know some stuff. But I do love this. He's explaining how House with ATM can't defend itself against Mistborns. The Lord Ruler has a large control of the market. He funds his armies by making ATM scarce and selling extra bits for lavish amounts. If you knew more about the economics of Allomancy, this would probably make a lot more sense to you. Like, he's not being patronizing 100%. And I think he's really saying, like, just believe me that this is happening. He's not holding this knowledge above her, saying you're stupid for not understanding this, or he's assuming she doesn't understand it. But I just love that they both have such secret lives that neither of the other ones know about. It reminds me very much of Shallan and how much people underestimate her. I really enjoy that part of the book.
Speaking of underestimating, so he's given Valette these warnings, and he's like, you should get out of the city, you should go. And she's like, okay, but you got to look out for Shan Alariel. And Eland is like, oh, she's harmless. I don't think she is, Eland. You need to be more careful. And he's like, look at us. We're both like, it's so much more dangerous than you think. And neither of us are listening. I like that he recognizes that he's not just like, shh. He's like, we're just such a pair. Hey, he's cool. Eland, you're cool by me.
Yeah.
And she's like, listen, let's enjoy tonight. Have you ever had a dream that let's go on a nice little walk together. And they do. They go on a little tiny stroll. And
talking about traitorous things.
Yeah, she taps the metal on his finger and says, huh, pure gold. Aren't you worried about allomancers? Eland asked. He shrugged. I don't know. They're not the sort of thing I've ever had to deal with. You don't wear metal out on the plantations? Vin shook her head, tapping one of the barrettes in her hair. Painted wood, she says. Mm-hmm. He says, the longer you stay in Luthadel, the more you'll realize... Summarizing, the Lord Ruler wears metal rings, and so does the nobility. That the Lord Ruler wears metal because he knows the nobility will mimic him and will give the Inquisitors power. Emily, is Eland a secret misting?
Yes. I think that's only fair.
What metal is he a misting
for? Oh, I think he's a Mistborn.
You think he's a full Mistborn?
I do, yeah. I would love it if he were, because I feel like that's another secret that, like, each of them are keeping from each other. Like, I love that.
So, Mistborn power couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because rings are vulnerable. So, like, Vin's earring is fine. Mm-hmm. Because if the metal is in your body, if it's a piercing, then you can't yank on it.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about how horrible it would feel to, like, if you've got a fist, to have a Mistborn yank a ring off your finger.
Oh, it'd deglove your finger, for sure.
owie.
Sorry. Owie. Sorry. Trigger warning, everybody. Yucky, no, yucky, fine. Yucky.
You're fine. It's just, ooh.
But I agree with you, Megan. I for sure, like, it is that arrogance of just like, well, I don't really have to deal with that. You know, what if you did, sir? Did you think about that?
Yeah, it'll probably never happen. Okay, so your thing that Eland might be a secret Mistborn. Did you note the obligator that walked by them, that stared at them curiously mm-hmm. and then left? We now know a number of obligators are Mistings. Mm-hmm. So if Eland is trying to use emotional allomancy on Vin at this moment to be like, oh, ho, 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 maybe that obligator noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. They're talking about the Lord Ruler and Elan's friends and what you said earlier, that like they want things to change. And he says, take those executions a few days ago. I don't see they did any good. The Ska rebelled. In reprisal, the ministry executed random people. What's that going to do besides making them more angry? Except he doesn't know about the soothing stations that prevent people from being angry. But he says next time the rebellion will be bigger. Does that mean the Lord Ruler will order more people beheaded? How long can that continue before there aren't any Ska left? And so then Vin's like, okay, Vin. So Vin's like, okay, Eland, we're making a Cosmere podcast. I'm going to ask you a hypothetical open-ended question. What would you do if you were in charge? Mm-hmm. Emily, what does Eland say?
He says that he doesn't know. He's like, I've read a lot of books, and I haven't found any answers. I mean, he is a young revolutionist. I don't expect him to have the perfect solution. I admire that he is trying, and I admire that he's not the sort of person that's like, well, if I were in charge, things would be different and things would be better. And, you know, having not thought through all of the ramifications of everything.
Unlike me, anytime I talk about the animation industry, if I were in charge, things would be different.
Yeah. But he says right. Exactly what I said earlier. The Lord Ruler has been around for a long time. You'd think he'd have found a better way.
Well, they peace out. And she's like, go hang out with your drinking buddies. And he's like, how do you know about that? And she's like, Simba, everybody. So they part. He leaves with a little wink after he bows. Emily, was this their last ball together? Are things going to kick off immediately after this?
Oh.
If this was their last time being on the same side, how do you feel about how this conversation went?
I don't think it's going to be the last one. I think that because of the end of the book, or the end of the chapter, he's going to have spies go follow her, and he's going to get information on her that she doesn't realize, and they're going to meet again and have a very heavily double-sided conversation that is going to be a joy for the audiences to read, where he knows things about her, but she doesn't know that, and she, like, I think is going to confirm a lot of things that maybe she didn't want confirmed in this conversation mm-hmm. she has with them.
All right. And then we're jumping to Elan's point of view. You guys just got to know, Vin tries to talk to Shan. Shan shuts her down, and Vin's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. She Emily, must have figured it out, Vin thought. She finally realized out that I'm not just playing with Elan. She knows that I care for him and doesn't trust me to keep her secrets.
Do you think that's what it is?
Secrets.
Do you think Vin's right?
I don't know, because the her Terrasman, Shan's Terrasman, he was so different from Sazed. He didn't have the same spirit. That's got to be something. Maybe maybe he warned Shan off. I don't know that that would be his place, but maybe he's like, say Zed is weird, therefore Valette is weird, therefore you should stay away from her. I don't know. I don't know.
Mm-mm. All right, Emily, Elin's point of view. You loved this. Tell me about it.
I did. So they, you know, they're sitting around, they're talking, they're going to talk about the old philosophers. And so I think he's ready to talk philosophy or something, but they just want to talk about how flirty he's getting with a girl. All right, I'll say it. Jost replied, running his hand through his hair. You've been spending a lot of time with that Renew girl, Eland. There's a simple explanation for that, Eland said. You see, I happen to like her. Not good, Eland. Not good. And they're talking about, like, you're the heir to your house. You cannot be seen. Like they are reinforcing society's expectations and the rules where I feel like Eland feels like that's really hypocritical of them. If they're the ones getting together to talk about what if things were different and what if, you know, we could change things. And here they are saying like, well, you can't, this is how you're supposed to do it and you're doing it wrong. And so I think he feels a little bit betrayed by his friends.
Yeah. Ugh. They're not in it because they want to be revolutionaries. They're doing it because their friends are in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yep. This is, we just hang out, we talk.
Yeah.
We just, yeah.
Yep.
And some of them aren't even heirs to this. So like, Eland is the most, do you know what? Eland is the Gainsey of his friend group.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? He's the one with the most power and the most influence and it, like, has the biggest dreams. Mm-hmm. And the others are, like, there because they're his friends.
Yeah. That's from The Raven Boys by Maggie Steve Otter for our listeners who might not know who that is. Which is a fabulous series, and I really want to do that for our podcast one day. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. But Yates has to leave. Jates has to leave Yastes. I don't know how to say that name.
Yastes, well, the Nasty. He's from Roshar.
doing the Yasty. Jastes. I'm so tired, listeners.
Why?
I don't know if you've clocked that. Oh, and I have to leave for the theater in an hour.
We got to hurry this up.
Shower. Yep. Okay, here we go. Elon's just thinking about Valette, and he's so worried about her. She obviously didn't know how dangerous Luthadel could be. There's so much more to politics than parties and intrigues. What would happen if someone decided to send a Mistborn to deal with her and her uncle? Emily, what would happen if one of the noble houses tried to sic a Mistborn on Vin?
They'd get their rear handily handed to them.
Yeah. Did Valette's uncle know how to take the proper precautions? Did he even worry about allomancers? Mm-hmm. Emily, what are the proper precautions to defend yourself from allomancy?
I probably have no metal in your house. I don't know how that would work, though, because I think these people have plenty of metal. I feel like being up high, like their houses are really high up in the air, just to make it a little harder for people to get up. What?
So, Mistborn can famously fly.
I know, but to make it make it a little harder, a little harder.
If you build a 10-foot fence, I will show you a 12-foot ladder.
they have their own guards. They have their own because that's who Kelsier fought at the beginning.
Kelsier fights against.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. He's like, my only option is to make Vin leave.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. All right. He's home.
It's home.
He's back at his house.
Has a confrontation with his dad, who's mad that he... So he's getting flack from his friends about hanging out with Valette, and he's getting lectured by his dad about hanging out with Valette.
We find out his dad is a Misting.
Mm-hmm.
What metal can Straff Venture burn?
Oh, it's tin.
Yes.
Yes, he was a tin eye.
Which means he has improved
senses. Eyesight.
Yes. You know, Emily, it's been a month. Can you name the 8 basic metals in the Chapel Rome song?
Iron, steel, tin, pewter, brass, zinc, copper, bronze.
Yeah! I did it! All right, what do iron and steel do?
Push and pull.
On?
Metal.
Yes. Sorry. Sorry. Every metal, every pairing is a push and a pull. But yeah. Tin. And you just said tin. It improves all of your
senses.
What does pewter do?
It strengthens you.
Yep. Zinc and brass push and pull on your
emotions.
Uh-huh. And then copper and bronze
hide you.
Yeah, so one of them hides you and the other one
surprises you.
You were so close.
Surprise, here I am.
Sorry, I was trying to mime reveal. So burning bronze lets you detect allomancy, and mm-hmm. burning copper lets you hide your own allomancy.
Yeah.
And then gold and atium are paired, and atium lets you see
the future.
Someone else's future. Someone and else's then gold lets you see
your own past.
Yeah. Okay. Emily, that was incredible. Look at you, sharp as ever after a whole month away.
Whole month.
It's because you think about Chapel Roan, because what does this podcast do? We never forget the lesbians.
Never forget the lesbians.
All right. Straff Venture is talking with Tensoon, the Venture Chondra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have heard the phrase Chondra before. Someone, who is the Chondra that we know?
We know a Chondra?
Yes. We do. And we
do.
Do
we know they're a Chondra?
What a Chondra was. We do.
Are you sure?
I'm so sure that they've used this word in the book before.
Is a Chondra... Okay, what's the thing that Vin and Kelsier saw out in the wilderness that eats bones?
That grows... is a mist wraith.
A mist wraith. Okay. Are you sure?
I am so sure this word has been used in the book before. I am so sure. I know this has been used. What chapter are we in?
We're in 28.
Well, someone we know is a Chondra. Someone we know is a Chondra. Who could it be? Who amongst our group is secretly a Chondra? This will be such a cause of great mystery and intrigue. Someone among us is a Chondra. Who could it be? I know this word has been used in this book before. I know it in my heart.
Well, skip going to practice then and sit and figure it out.
Stop it.
I'm so sorry. Oh,
iron, steel. Sorry, this is important enough that I'm taking time to find
that's
this.
That's fine. That's fine.
Listeners, do any of you have a PDF of the book and you can word search? Okay, they talk. I know that this is whatever. Emily, Yes. I want you to just read the paragraph on being a Chondra.
Okay. It says, Elon turned and walked into the study. His father sat in his chair, speaking quietly with Ten Soon, the Venture Chondra. Elon still wasn't used to the creature's most recent body, which had once belonged to a servant in the Hastings household. Elon shivered as it noticed him. It bowed, then quietly retreated from the room. So I'm assuming that it's something that, let's say, like, the Venture Chondra. And so either each house has one, or maybe only the most important households have one, and they use them as spies, I'm assuming, because this one used to belong, the body took over a servant in the Hastings household, so I'm assuming they had a spy on the inside. Hercules Mulligan!
Okay. Okay. 100 pages ago.
What chapter?
Chapter 20. I think. It's on page 330 of your book.
That's 330 of my book is chapter 19.
Okay. That's Can Hoid. You read at the very top? I don't know how you do it.
Page 330 says, Hoid calmly put away the pipe, then climbed to his feet.
I lied
feet.
To you. Please read page... Okay. It's... Okay, what chapter am I in? Sorry, this PDF is spaced very weirdly. Yes, did I just look up partner PDF for this? I have purchased... 17
dozens of them. Hundreds of them.
So in chapter 19, this is when Kelsey is out and about. He talks to Hoid the beggar. He pretends to be a beggar in order to talk to Straff. When he comes back to the Mansion Renew. Yes.
That's and a he's new look talking for you.
With Renew. It says, it seems the General Skav gotten wind of the 11th medal. Okay, here we go. Kelsier says, a man could get... We'll spread opposite rumors to make the nobility focus more on each other and less on me. Though amusingly, Lord Venture encouraged me to search out information about myself. A man could get very confused from this kind of play acting. I don't know how you do it, Renew. It is who I am.
He's the Chondra!
Said simply.
That's okay, right.
I definitely asked you what a Chondra was, and you're like, I don't know. So now that you've got one more clue, what is Ten Soon? What is Ten Soon wearing in this?
A paragraph? Body. Someone else's body that is not his or yeah, its or
Elon
hers.
Wasn't used to the creature's most recent body.
Yeah.
So, Emily, how is Lord Renew pretending to be Lord Renew so well?
Because that's literally Lord Renew's body, just someone okay. else is wearing it.
Listeners, if you're yelling at me, you should. Good on you, listeners. Way to be. Although I feel vindicated that the word Chondra did appear one time in the book already.
And you knew
and
it.
And you know what? This podcast is all about me pointing out things so Emily can know about them.
So I can have a more rich experience.
Yeah. So here we go. Ten Soon is another Chondra. And
are they enemies? So are they lovers?
I'm guessing Lord
are
Renew they... isn't Lord Renew's real name. What? You meet with that woman, you met with that woman again, he asked. Valette? Yes. Not for as long as I would have liked, though. I forbade you from spending time with her. Yes, Elon said. I remember. Straff's expression darkened.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, he's scary.
Yeah. Because he has ladies that he wants Elon to talk to.
I love this conversation. We're not going to repeat the whole thing because I have to drive away for the theater in 55 minutes and I actually have stuff to do before the show starts. So You know, there's a newspaper prop that got crumpled and I forgot to bring it home so I could iron it because it was a special custom newspaper. And I'm going to have to iron it at the theater. Rude. Anyway, we're skipping a bit over the Straff Eland stuff, if that's okay.
Just that he is awful to his child. He makes fun of him. And he... Okay, great. I don't know what I did. But the balloon effect just popped up into the Discord. Megan can't do it.
What did you do? Do it again.
I said, one, he's terrible to his child. Two, he makes fun of him. Three, I think it was just a one and done. I don't think I can weird. Repeat it.
He does say that you can't even bet a woman properly. The last and only time I know about you trying, I had to take you to the brothel myself.
Yeah. And Eland, in his head, is thinking, okay, he's bringing that up on purpose. He knows how much it bothers you. Like, he and his dad have a terrible relationship, and this just echoes all of that.
All right. Jastis is here.
Yep. Okay.
Listeners, I'm so lost on how to pronounce this name. Help me.
Gastis. It's not a J, it's a G.
Can you tell me? Yeah, can you tell me when a J has ever made a G sound?
You don't know. Maybe they just, Brandon hasn't said it yet.
Okay.
Okay. He never says it. It's a Y in Stormlight Archives. Right. Sorry, I yelled. I didn't need to get so worked up about that.
Okay, I've decided his name, Gosty.
Gosty, great.
Okay, so Gosty shows
up. We're going to get more listener emails about that.
Those will be the only changes I make to the adaptation is more marsh scenes, and this character is now called Gosty.
No explanation.
Okay, and then he drops. So Gosty left earlier not to talk to people at the ball the way his parents wanted, mm-hmm. but to get information from his spies on Valette, and Valette was not even in the carriage. Mm-hmm. And he says, she's a spy from the other houses. They're trying to get at your father through you. They created the perfect woman to attract you. Dark-haired, mysterious, outside of the regular political structure. They made her low-born enough it'd be a scandal for you to be interested in, and then set her on you. So they're like, Valette is all about you. She is targeted to be exactly what you like and exactly what you want. She's an op.
Yeah. And the thing is, this is all accidental. She just happened to be standing. She really literally was. What? Just happened to be standing in the exact spot. But I think the houses are so used to the complex gears turning in their political machinations that they're just like, well, of course it was on purpose. I love this. This is the miscommunication trope I'm okay with. But he doesn't want to see House Venture fall. He's not a traitor to his house, so he wants to get more information. So he makes the deal with his dad that he'll go to the luncheon with the other girl tomorrow as long as he can borrow some spies.
Incredible.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it. Good job.
Do you know, we did some side conversations that will be cut out, so maybe this won't be quite 3 hours, but Song of the week,
yes,
is Guess Who's back again, in honor of us coming back from our break.
What's the name of that song?
I don't even know. But we do have one other listener email that came in, mm-hmm. That I would also like to read now. So this email is from Macy Brunson.
Macy
says, hey guys, love your podcast, and I love to hear some of your random tangents. Great news for you.
You are in luck, sister.
I love the Cosmere, but can't talk to any of my friends or family about it because they all refuse to read it. Do you know what, Macy? I know that exact feeling. It took me like 10 years to get Emily to do this. For two of those years, the book sat in her car untouched.
It did.
Unopened.
In my front seat.
Do you know what? Macy, never give up. Maybe someday you'll start a podcast.
I'll listen to it if you do.
Anyway, I have a silly question and some art I want you guys to see. So the question is, what would the main Muppet's Night Radiant powers be? Example, Kermit as a Windrunner. It can be as stupid or as accurate as you want. Emily, how many types of Knights Radiant can you name?
Oh, goodness me. Windrunner, Truth Seeker, Oathbringer.
No, that's one for three.
It's because we haven't.
Truth Watcher. Okay. Do you know what? My turn. Let's see how well I can do. Windrunner, Edge Dancer, Bondsmith, Truth Watcher, Lightweaver, Dustbringer. High Collar?
Eld Scholar.
I guess I just don't care about.
Do we do Shallan's? We did Lightweaver.
We did.
We did Renarin's, which is Truth Watcher.
Uh-huh.
We did Yasna's.
Which is an Else Caller.
What's Lift?
An Edge Dancer. Edge which Dancer. I'm pretty sure I said.
Okay.
And Dalinar, which is a Bondsmith.
Bondsmith. Just go through the Heralds.
Emily, can you name all 10 heralds? Okay. What's... Yezrian, Taln, Kalek. I'm going to put, do you know what, Macy? I'm going to put a pin in your question. We are pushing close to 3 hours. We'll come back to it. But the art is...
It's such a good question, by the way. I am looking forward to answering it.
Yeah. Your art is very cute. Macy the Edge Dancer, we will come back to your email at the start of our next episode. Emily, please help me remember. Listeners, you're great. The next chunk of chapters holds the scene that I want to storyboard for this book. And I remember this because as I was flipping through, I'm like, huh, the texture of these pages in my book are different because I flipped through them so much. So we're going to do another gigantic chapter chunk. We're going to do three chapters again because we're getting close to the end of the book. So we're going to do 29, 30, and 31.
Perfect.
Because I would like to get to the next book.
Amen, sister. Got to get back to words of rhythm of war.
Dad's now ahead of you in the books.
He is.
So yeah, this book only has 38 chapters and an epilogue. So we're in the 30s. We're in the last 10 chapters now.
Nice.
All right, listeners, I have 45 minutes to shower and get ready and go to the theater.
Megan, I know you can do this because I believe in you.
I believe in you too!
Ready? Break! Gross!